Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 313.
This week on the podcast, Pete Buttigieg is the nobody kid that's outraising Cory Booker.
And Democrats are going to win the culture war against themselves if it's the last thing they do.
Plus, the dark side of experience, the longer the political career, the greater chance you've had to take a slew of photos you regret.
And who cares if your neighbors are citizens? Just Trump.
Plus, British voters are looking for a way to Brexit without actually leaving the EU, and unfortunately they can't find one.
And Trump can't say words.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's it.
We come to you with breaking news.
Yes.
It's so breaking that we don't know any information about it.
That's right.
But Kirstjen Nielsen, DHS secretary,
yep,
is resigning.
That's right.
The very Kirstjen who spells her name with a silent J.
I was going to say, and Trump saw that there was a J in there and was like, she must not be from here.
That's right.
And then
she's gone.
Now she's out.
Do we know if she is resigning or being asked to resign?
No, I mean, who knows?
Her and Trump have been having battles over immigration policy for a while.
Yeah, I mean, she is sort of like, you know, she's obviously terrible.
Right.
But don't get us wrong. And we're not here to tell you literally anything otherwise. Right. She's perhaps on a scale of like zero to like Trump level terrible, she's probably not at
the Trump level terrible
that he would prefer her to be at. I think.
I could see that.
Just shy.
I mean,
certainly.
Certainly,
she's bad.
There enough that she was able to get the job.
Oh yeah, for sure. And she saw us through the entire, you know, children being ripped away from their family at the border. So I mean, she's certainly not. She's not a saint. No. But anyway, she's out.
And she's also no more. So
no.
We'll see what happens.
What level of terrible he can fill
that with. Who is he going to find to fill that with?
Ooh, buddy.
I mean, because that is a department in chaos. They have lost all these children.
Oh, yeah.
They have a crisis at the border that's manufactured.
I think I saw some story recently that they said that they've asked, like, for 2 years now to, like,
To find the kids.
To re-find them.
Come on now. These are children.
Yeah.
We're not talking about finding dominoes that you lost in your bedroom somewhere. Like, this is... Was that a big problem?
I know.
I was going to say,
have you lost dominoes recently?
It feels like dominoes are a thing where have you ever been at someone's house and just, like, found a domino?
I feel like
that's a thing that because it's a toy no one plays with anymore and is also, like, a sort of... They're stone-like in their way, but they're like, you know, it's easy to lose a domino. Like, dominoes get shuffled off tables, and then dominoes are gone. Sometimes you're just finding dominoes.
You're short a domino.
Like, short a domino. Because I feel like I've never seen a domino set where there wasn't one missing domino, and no one knew where the domino was.
Yeah.
Like, and I bet this is happening to people of all ages, but I think specifically to elderly people, because they play the most dominoes.
For sure. They definitely
In any case, I'm an only child. I don't know about board games.
Right. Well, who were you playing dominoes with?
No. Or any board game with?
No, you were reading. That's how you got so smart.
That's right. That's why I know all the words.
Yeah. Also, so was I.
Yeah. I don't... Neither of us know what we're talking about here. We couldn't have less experience with this. That's why both of us thought dominoes might be a thing that we should talk about for the first 5 minutes of our podcast. In any case, the real news that we actually intended to lead with before we had breaking news was that last week was the fundraising deadline.
Yeah, we talked about it. I think we had some numbers.
Democratic primary.
I think some people said what they were before they actually had to.
Some people were more excited than other people, and some people were better at math than other people.
Right.
And we still don't have numbers from everyone. We don't have numbers from Warren, but we have some concerning news because her head of fundraising, basically, the person who's responsible for raising money, just sort of like abruptly left.
Yeah, I think the problem for her is, and I get what she's trying to do, is that she's trying to sort of like have the moral high ground in terms of who she's taking money from. But the problem is that every single Democrat on here is not taking PAC money.
Right.
So the only thing that is really setting her apart is that she is also not taking sort of like, she's not going to like big fundraisers. She's not making phone calls to donors. She's not dealing with bundlers.
No.
And the distinction I don't think is great enough to have like such a moral high ground that it makes
certainly not
you
to the average voter.
Not to the average voter. And so the problem is that she's missing out on a lot of, you know, $3,000 checks that she could be having
I feel like, I mean, having gone to some of those fundraisers, I applaud anyone who's willing to not do them because it is sleazy. It is rich people getting FaceTime with someone that you do not get FaceTime with and essentially paying them to listen to their thoughts, which isn't fair. And I can understand why that's a problematic thing.
Right.
It's not a distinction that is that politically easy to make. It's right. not something that is clear to voters necessarily, because as yeah. a voter, you don't necessarily realize that this is where a lot of the sort of medium wealth is getting traded. Right. A lot of the people, when politicians are hearing from people, they're yeah. often hearing from rich people in these contexts where those people are handing over their maximum donation and a bundle of others. They're not necessarily just hearing from the Waltons, you right. know? So it's certainly a difficult road to hoe.
Yeah,
in a
it is.
Field where no
and
one else is
hoeing
it. And
it's how you can make a lot of money. I mean, you know, if you go to a fundraiser that has 50 people at it and they all write you a $2,000 check, or you call them and ask them to do it, but yeah. even if it's not a fundraiser and you literally just pick up a phone or have one of your bundlers pick up a phone, I mean, that's $100,000 that you made in an evening.
Yeah.
And when you're, you know, struggling to make money, that's not nothing. And no. it's going to cost a lot of money to run one of these campaigns for a long period of time.
Yeah.
And there's only so much money that Joe Blow America has to give out when they're giving people like Bernie Sanders $18 million, which is what he raised this quarter.
Exactly.
I mean, if you add up the numbers that we have, we're into, you know, over $50 million here, just with five people whose fundraising numbers that we
genius
have.
Genius to watch Brent try to add this in his head that quickly.
I think I got pretty close.
I think you got pretty close, too. I am shocked. I did not offer to help in any way, knowing that my estimate was going to be bullshit.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see how I don't think it would be such a huge deal for her to walk that back.
No, I don't think
so. It's just nobody's going to hold her against
that. No one understood
that
the distinction in the first
nobody
place.
Exactly. So it's just sort of like, I think that if she's going to want to soldier on, then she's
going to the only person who would have any bone to pick with that distinction would be Bernie Sanders, and he isn't... I don't think he's
going to take it up with her.
He's not going to take it up with her. No, no. Exactly. Yeah. The other person who we don't have numbers from is Gillibrand, or at least we weren't able to find numbers for her. I think probably because she didn't raise very much money.
I have a feeling that's probably true. I feel like she was one of the people who I was getting the notifications that she was like really pestering people to get to 65,000 people so she could be on a debate stage.
Yeah. So,
that would not surprise me at all if she was one of those people.
As usual, the day was won by Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
He raised $18.2 million from 900,000 donations made by 525,000 people.
Yep.
That
average of $20.
You know, they were trying to get to 1 million donations.
Right. The average really went down because you know how he loves to let go with 27.
It was down at 20.
Right. But the problem was it's not a problem, I suppose. Right. But what they were really trying to do was to make a big splashy announcement that they had reached 1 million donations. Right. And they didn't quite get there, but still 900,000 separate donations.
It's significantly
is a big
more than anyone else in the field.
And a lot of other candidates have been doing this too, because when you're talking about that $65,000 donations number, it doesn't have to be a certain dollar amount.
Right.
So I'm getting like, you know, Facebook advertisements and texts from various people, and it's just sort of like, give me a damn dollar.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people asking me for a dollar on the last day of the filing. And Sanders was really doing that too. Yeah. He was like, give us $1, give us $3, because like he wasn't concerned about the amount of money that he was going to announce. He was wanting to try and get to, like, you know, we've had 1 million donations in 6 weeks.
Well, I mean, I'm sure, already aware that he was going to announce an amount.
Oh, he knew that he was probably
significantly more than anyone else.
I'm quite certain, and in second place, actually, was Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess I'm not totally surprised.
I'm not surprised, but also, I don't know that necessarily makes the distinction she wants either. It does to the DNC crowd. But that looks like that's literally a distinction between a guy outraising her by $6 million who literally just asked people for $20 or $27 and somebody who you know was taking bigger checks.
100%.
So it's nice that she has that kind of fundraising prowess. It's why she's in the field.
100%. Yes,
it doesn't
absolutely.
Paint the picture of grassroots excitement the way that I think it would if Sanders wasn't like roundly beating her by an amount that we are by more than the amount that Cory Booker raised in the entire thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, like that, I don't know, that doesn't make you look like a grassroots hero necessarily, especially because she doesn't, obviously, she's not going to release numbers about how many people and how many donations there were that are going to look like these.
You know, but you got to have the money.
But you got to have the money.
I mean,
so that's,
she's at least got that.
And
it
establishes
control.
Her certainly as a player in this race, which people are struggling to establish themselves as.
Beto O'Rourke announced $9.4 million. Which was only in 18 days, because he sort of was one of the last.
But he has the benefit of his official announcement coming in this time frame, too.
Correct, because
like, the rest of them had already announced and had already done the first big push.
Right.
This was his initial push.
And six like, you know, two-thirds of that came in 24 hours.
Exactly. And then, so he only, and this is what we said would happen with him.
Right.
He wasn't able to raise that kind of, like, Sanders raised that amount, raised $6 million the moment he announced, and then he has now gone on to raise much more than
that. And then had $10 million by the end of the week. Remember?
Right, exactly.
He raised $10 million in the first seven
exactly.
days.
Exactly. So, yeah. the Beto thing, I think, is probably going to taper off.
The fact that he couldn't get to $10 million in almost 3 weeks.
Yeah,
That proves our point, which we knew it would.
We knew it would. We didn't need to prove. We know everything. Booker raised $5 million. He just announced that. But interestingly, there were some wild card announcements that are really... If you are wondering why Pete Buttigieg is on your TV screen every moment of every day...
Right?
It's because the man raised $7 million as a nonsense candidate who is literally the mayor of a small town in Indiana, basically. Mm-hmm. In the same field... I mean, in the same time period that Booker... Cory Booker, U.S. Senator
right.
Cory
US
Booker,
Senator,
raised $5 million. And U.S. Senator who has an unsavory relationship to some big industries.
And also, Pete Buttigieg is a mayor. Cory Booker was America's favorite mayor for a while. I don't even know that you could call Pete Buttigieg America's favorite
mayor. He's America's least known mayor.
Right, exactly.
He's a guy. Like, Bill de Blasio is a mayor that you've heard of. You have not heard of Pete Buttigieg.
Yeah.
Eric Garcetti, a mayor you've heard of. Like, there are mayors out there that you have heard of.
Yeah, we saw him today.
Yeah, we saw Eric Garcetti today.
Yeah,
celebrating the gays.
Yes, that's right.
Like you do in West Hollywood.
With Adam Schiff.
Yeah. We knew it was Adam Schiff because his droney voice was...
Yeah, we were like, who's that boring person in the background?
Adam Schiff is speaking. Right, yeah. We got it. But I mean, Beto O'Rourke outraised Buttigieg by $2.4 million, but that is it. And think about Beto O'Rourke's trajectory when he was... this hot fundraising Senate candidate just a few months ago. I mean, that's a huge number for
and
people.
And also, Buttigieg has not announced.
Right.
He's exploratory committee his way around.
And he was the first exploratory committee, I believe. And
one of.
Continues to be exploratorying. Yep. But I mean, this is a lot of money for someone who's exploratorying around.
Yeah.
And then Andrew Yang raised $2 million.
Yeah.
Andrew Yang, who's basically his entire premise of his campaign is just to get him into the debates. But we like him. Because of that email that he sent where he was like, I'm not going to keep asking. Don't worry.
Right. Reasonable humans would treat other reasonable humans.
I'm trying to get to this fund. You know, if you can donate, great. If not, you won't hear from me.
Right. But he qualified.
Qualified.
Yep.
I know.
Universal
it's crazy.
Basic income. He's also got the Yang Gang. Have you heard about them?
No.
By the way, I just read an article about
Yang
them.
The Yang Gang.
He's got like his... He's like... Part of the reason that he got to that amount of money is like he's like crushing the internet.
Yeah.
At least in certain circles of the internet.
Yeah.
And he's got, like, the Yang Gang is his sort of, like, crew. And they are... Their meme game is...
Oh, I'm not surprised.
On point. Strong.
I'm not surprised.
Meme game strong.
He's...
Yeah. And so
in
that's...
the tech scene, you know?
You can... If you Google Andrew Yang memes right now, you're going to really just be able to spend the rest of the day digging
into
those.
The Yang
game. And they're all good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no... That's an important part of running for president.
Sure is.
But yeah, he's going to be in the debates.
Yep.
He's a man who's qualified for the debates.
That's right.
And because of that, at the debates, we're going to get to talk about universal basic income. And that's why we love primaries.
Yes.
Meanwhile, some infighting on the heels of these announcements are a kind of infighting that I think I could rant about for probably 600 years.
Oh, I know.
But have already subjected you guys to a certain amount of ranting about... Which is, a lot of Democrats are mad because, you know, they decided last month that they were going to exclude Fox News from hosting any debates because, you know, because Fox News is terrible.
Right.
And so they are now mad because Bernie Sanders has agreed to do a town hall for them on April 15th.
Yeah.
You might remember that the Sanders and Clinton Fox town halls were some of the best town halls of the 2016 cycle.
Because they got asked things that CNN were trying to ask them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So... I get why they don't want Fox News to host a debate.
100%. I do as well.
I think every candidate should do a Fox News town hall.
I do too.
I think knowing how to talk to Fox News' audience is an important thing to be able to do as president, first of all.
You're going to have to.
And second of all, Fox News asked questions that no one else wanted to ask.
Right.
They were the only people in the 2016 cycle that asked Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton for distinctions on their position on abortion.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It made a statement. I mean, I know I talk about this a lot, but the difference between hearing somebody say, it's a doctor and a woman who should decide, it has nothing to do with me, government has no role in it, and hearing Hillary Clinton talk her way around advocating for late-term abortion bans yeah. was enlightening. It was yeah. important because then later in that cycle, when people told me that she was the candidate for women's rights, I was like, I have a bone to pick with you here.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have known that if Fox News hadn't hosted a town hall with both of them.
Right.
And also, she did a town hall with them last time. It's not like they aren't, it's not like no one cooperated with, you know, it.
Yeah.
It's not like these town halls were problematic for them in a meaningful sense.
Yeah.
The debate, sure, don't let them host a debate.
Sure.
I would contend you shouldn't let MSNBC host a debate either. I would contend that nobody who is a sort of, no news source with a position should be hosting debates. But whatever. I absolutely don't think that it's smart to sort of dig your heels into what is already a ridiculous culture war.
Right.
Without trying to sell your vision to the other side.
Well, and also, I feel like...
Try at least.
Right. And the other thing is that it's like you... The DNC, their whole... Basically, the position after 2016 that they gave Sanders as his leadership position was like outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't understand why you wouldn't want him or anyone to go and try and sell your positions on something. I mean, we saw him convince an entire roomful of West Virginia coal miners that they should have free health insurance. And when every single person in your primary is running on Medicare for All, like, maybe you should fucking send somebody to the network to try and convince the people who are watching the network that maybe they might like that.
When a majority of Republicans are in favor of that position. I mean, the idea that you wouldn't open up space for someone to at least try to sell your vision to other people.
Right.
Like, I understand. I am not someone who says we should search for the middle. I'm not someone who says that we should just, you know, sort of moderate our positions so that everyone feels comfortable.
But if you can sell those viewers on your actual progressive positions.
I absolutely believe that you should still talk to those people, though. Fox News has a huge audience.
Yeah, of course.
It's a huge audience that is comprised of a lot of people that are in really important states.
Right.
And the idea that you would shut them out completely, and not, this isn't the DNC offering to do this. Individual candidates can go and do this.
Yeah.
It's not like the DNC has to approve of everyone's, like, this is not coming from an authority that has to approve of Fox News.
Yeah.
But every single candidate should want to sell their vision.
Yeah.
You shouldn't moderate your positions to go into a Fox News town hall, but you should certainly give those people who watch Fox News a chance to hear what you have to say. And so, in any case, we're furious about this. There's also, you know, that dredged up all those, that controversy with Donna Brazile getting the questions, you know, the questions beforehand or whatever. She's at Fox News now. So, everyone's fighting everyone, and a lot of people are making angry comments about Sanders that are mostly rooted in how mad they are that he's, like, one of the leading contenders in the field right now, and they don't know what to do about it.
I know. Well, I've been seeing, like, a lot of people, you know, because there have been, you know, I have a lot of Sanders haters on Facebook, obviously, and I have been, you know, there's been a lot of articles recently about, like, why isn't he being treated as the front runner?
Yeah.
Right. At this point.
Biden is being treated as the front runner. He's not in the race yet.
And he's not in the race, and he's
Bernie
also dealing
Sanders
with...
is the only front runner in the race right now.
Continues to have to deal with some shit. And when you look at literally every single metric in terms of, you know, people being excited about a candidate, people, the money race is really the only thing. When you look at polls, he's like really right there behind Biden. He's also does well in the early states, at least the first three. I just saw a poll the other day that he's leading with Latinos.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, you know,
meaningful.
He has the most money, and he may very well win Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada, which, I mean, he's really the closest person who could lock this down.
I'm not saying
that he will, but no one else on that list could, including Joe Biden, because I just don't think that he's once he gets in the race, I think we're all going to be we've all been reminded in the last week that he's not a great candidate, but I mean, he hasn't even had to talk about his position. He hasn't even announced. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I think he sounds like a great candidate when all you remember is that he was in the Obama administration and he smiles.
Right.
In a charming manner.
Yeah.
He's not a great candidate once you start to hear his positions.
But I've been seeing a lot of my friends, like, commenting on articles like that, and it's just sort of like, well, he's not the front runner.
I was like, he's unequivocally the front runner.
But actually, he is, though.
He's literally the front runner. Of people that are in the race right now, he meets all the criteria for front runner.
I know. I mean, we're all talking about how great and wonderful Pete Buttigieg is. He's at 4% in the national polls. And I realize national polls aren't, you know,
at 10% in Iowa. Well, Bernie Sanders is at 25.
Right.
Like, Bernie Sanders is leading by double digits against anyone else in the field, aside from Joe Biden, who's, again, not in the race.
Right.
and has not had to really be scrutinized right. to the same way.
And
in
I'm
the same
curious
way.
About polling post what's been going on with him in the last week and a half.
I know. Me too. So. Meanwhile, panicking about a similar genre of problem, the DCCC, DCCC, the very people that send you 1 billion, like, horrifyingly annoying emails during every campaign cycle to the degree that it's all, like, from Nancy Pelosi saying all hope is lost or
yeah.
whatever.
Oh, yeah, totally.
They have decided that they have a new policy that they're not going to grant any contracts to pollsters or strategists or communication specialists that are working with any primary challengers.
Right, against are, Democratic incumbents.
Right, in their own primaries.
Right, so they wouldn't have, they're going to blacklist, they would have, you know, under this rule, they would have blacklisted whoever worked with AOC.
Right. Or Ayanna Pressley.
Ayanna Pressley.
Or like
right.
any of those people that ran primary challenger campaigns in right. districts that are now ultimately the most famous and, you know, right. seats that are the most popular.
Yeah.
They're basically trying to blacklist any contractors that work in the area
candidates.
And work with
right.
candidates like that in order to stop the bleeding of their thoroughly mediocre candidates.
Yeah.
So Justice Democrats started a new website called the DCCC Blacklist. Where they started, it's basically a database of vendors for insurgent candidates to go to.
Yeah.
So basically now we have like a bifurcated system in which, you know, people that are contractors for campaigns are going to have to choose whether or not they're insurgent people
right.
or incumbent people. I have a theory about this.
Great.
I think that this works out horribly for the Democrats. I mean,
for, sure.
for a lot of reasons, but one in particular, which is that they are not going to be privy to information that they need to know about what insurgent candidates are using as methods to get their name
100%.
Out there, because the vendors that normally
right.
sort of accumulate this information and because of that are experts in strategizing around these issues
right. I mean,
are not
going to
be accessible to them.
Right, I was going to say, the DCCC would be in a much better position if they had any idea how the Justice Democrats were able to get AOC elected.
Yeah. If they had any idea how their communications operation works, because they have, if we've learned anything from that cycle, it's that there are communications methods that the DCCC is not familiar
using.
With, is not using, that have been tremendously effective for some
yeah.
of these candidates. Like, who is Ayanna Pressley? That's information that people in Boston found out via a communication method, essentially,
right.
that the DCCC was not apparently familiar enough with to stop in its tracks.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
it's just wild to set yourself up this way, because
yeah.
if they think that they can continue to work with the same, you know, old entrenched, you know, contractors, none of whom are familiar with this new method of politics.
Yeah.
And because of that, you know, if vendors who are familiar with some of these new methods have to choose whether or not they can work for incumbents,
yeah.
then they're going to choose not to.
Right. Exactly. Well, and the thing that annoys me so much about this, besides the fact that it's just, it's stupid and for all the reasons that we've
right.
already talked about and is, but it's also, they're trying to have it both ways.
Yeah.
And that is what really, I feel like, gets at me, because it's sort of like, you can't say that you're going to blacklist all of these people who are working with insurgent candidates, but then also float that you're going to find a moderate candidate to run against someone like Ilhan Omar.
Right.
Which they have floated
yes.
as doing. So it's like, you can't say that you're not going to support sort of like a progressive candidate, and then also find specifically like moderates to run against some of
incumbents.
The progressive incumbents who have already won their seat.
Because
like,
Ilhan Omar
why
is an incumbent.
Right. If you don't want people to run against your incumbents, then you shouldn't want anybody to run against Ilhan Omar either.
Yeah.
And so there have been other, you know, there's been talk of that as well. I think it was mentioned at some point with even with AOC, where it was just
yeah.
like, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
people
I've
were,
heard it mentioned a
when
few
people
times.
Were, so it's just sort of like, you can't have it both ways. You shouldn't have it. Either
what,
way,
anyway,
what,
right.
what, this you shouldn't have it this way either,
no.
and I think this is going to come back to bite them, because also AOC told her 3.8 million Twitter followers to pause their donations to the DCCC and just to give specifically to progressive candidates.
Yeah.
So like, this is I think
you don't want to lose.
This is rife to blow up in their face.
I mean, the DCCC
and may already have
is a campaign fundraising operation. They
right.
do not want the most prolific fundraisers in their midst who are not big
right.
corporations
to be telling
their people that
their
they
donors
should,
not to
yeah.
give money to them, right?
Because also, someone like AOC brings credibility to their operation. The DCCC, without people donating to it, is just a place for corporations to pay off congresspeople.
Yeah.
That that it very openly becomes that when there's no regular people donating to right. it. So if the DCCC is, if all the donations regular people are making to the DCCC get rerouted directly to candidates, they lose any sort of say in how those campaigns are run. Yeah. They lose any control over, you know, how policy is discussed in those districts. They lose so much.
Yep.
And all they gain is a reputation for being an arm for corporations to pay off members of Congress.
Yeah.
That they become openly corrupt in a way that they are, but are not at least recognized.
Right.
Meanwhile, Joe Biden, the leak's never going to stop, you guys, because Joe Biden has been making women uncomfortable in photographs for years.
Right.
And while I'm not here to suggest that he, that makes him guilty of some sort of like high crime, right. I am here to suggest that his continuing sort of, the continuing rollout of this is giving him an opening to make continuing missteps tonally about how he's going to respond. And also it's just like, this maybe just isn't the right time, Joe Biden.
Yeah.
You know how it's often not been the right time for a woman to run for things?
Sure.
You know how we've been having to wait our turn forever to be the president?
Yep.
And you know how women have had to wait their turn to be on the Supreme Court. We had to wait our turn to be, we've had to wait our turn a lot.
Yep.
It's maybe a time for you to consider that it's not your turn.
Yep.
This is not a good time.
I think what makes him just personally sad about that is that it never will be.
Here's the thing. He's run for president like 3 different times.
I know.
It has never been.
No.
Joe Biden has never been elected president.
No, well, he's a bad candidate for president.
He says stuff he should not say on the campaign trail all the time.
And he's also a really, you know, we just talked about all these fundraising numbers. I would bet a lot of money that at least part of the reason that he has not yet formally announced is that he is desperate to try and figure out where tens of millions of dollars are going to come from.
Oh, for sure, because he's late into the field. There's a bunch of huge money.
I mean, that's why he had to drop out after the Iowa caucuses. Yeah, besides the fact that he did terribly, but he didn't have two nickels to rub together when it was over with because he hadn't raised any damn money.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But you know, he has shown like a complete, you know, he released a video that sort of like said he got it.
Right.
And sort of, I think, said mostly the right things, although one of the things in there was not, I'm sorry.
Classic.
But then, you know, this weekend, he's giving a speech and hugged the person who introduced him and then had some kids on stage and put his arm around one of the kids and both times made the same joke about how he had permission to touch the people to, you know, sort of laughter in the audience, which is like, those people, wherever he was, shouldn't have been laughing at that.
No.
But like, it was just like being glib about it, and also just like, you know, they on Meet the Press this morning, they talked to, or at least showed a clip of one of the women who had said that, you know, who had complained about how he had touched her at some point, and she was just like, clearly he doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And I just, he really doesn't seem like he gets it.
No. I don't think that his whole political methodology is about doing this kind of politics that involves touching people.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his persona is that.
Yeah.
He doesn't have an identity to fall back on that doesn't involve this behavior. And as much as for years that has served him well.
Right.
This is a time where it's not going to serve him well.
And all he has to do, I think, is just sort of, this could go away for him, I think. I think this is easy to fix if he showed a better understanding of it. Because I think the problem is that he just doesn't get that his intent does not matter.
Right.
That's not what we're all here discussing. What he did made these women uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So it does
in
not...
In a society that teaches them to be afraid all the time and that encourages, you know, and that doesn't count their voice equally and because of that,
so it does,
it's the context.
Right. It does not matter whether he intended to make them comfortable or whether he intended it as a loving gesture.
Right.
The fact is that at the time, they were uncomfortable and they are now saying that they were uncomfortable. So the only thing that he can do is to say, A, I won't do it again, which he kind of has, but he has not said, I'm sorry that my actions made some people uncomfortable.
Right.
And that's fucking easy. Just do it. just all of these politicians, and especially men, just don't ever want to say that they're sorry for something. And it's just like, that's all we're asking for from you. Nobody thinks that you're like a, you know, a skeezy sexual predator. Like, just say, I'm sorry for making you uncomfortable.
Well, and acknowledge that this is on a sort of a spectrum that is a larger problem with a society that is designed to make women uncomfortable. I think part of it is that these people don't connect why their good intentions were not enough, and so they just feel offended that they were called out about it. And like, look, if in your personal life, you know, maybe there are certain dynamics at play in your personal life where getting called out in your personal life can be a very difficult thing. It can be very sort of, and it can be done to destroy you for reasons that have nothing to do with you hugging people.
Yeah.
This is a man on the public stage, though, who, you know, who has served in every level of government for decades. This is not a personal relationship that we have with Joe Biden. This is a public relationship he has with us. And as a public person, that's when it becomes incumbent upon you to say, I recognize that my intention here was not the problem, but that there is a larger problem where we have, as a society, created a dynamic where this was not, you know, where this behavior made these women uncomfortable. And right. I don't want to be someone who contributes to that dynamic. I am sorry about that.
Yes, that, yes. You know?
Like, I feel like a lot of the time it sort of gets discussed as if this was just like a personal dynamic between him and the women, and his, the fact that he's a good guy should matter. And it matters in this. No one is accusing him of raping them.
Well, see, that's the thing. I think that
it should matter also that this is behavior that's reflective of a larger attitude towards women that does devalue them. And that if he can't see that that is what we're all talking about, then that is problematic.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I feel like people don't get that it's not that we're like, it's not that we're calling Joe Biden a bad person. This happens all the time. You know, I mean, it happens with, you know, when there's sort of like, you know, racial microaggressions. Mm-hmm. Somebody, you know, a white person maybe says something in regards to, you know, like a black person's hair or something. I don't necessarily, maybe you're not racist.
Right.
But like that probably made that person feel uncomfortable. And that's what's important here.
Acknowledging that you see the connection between your words and why they were uncomfortable is the important thing. You don't have to say, I'm a bad person because I asked a question I was curious about. You have to say, though, oh, you know, as someone who doesn't have the experience that they have, I can see why. I now understand that this is a thing that maybe I was trying to do to be polite, but wasn't perceived that way and made that person uncomfortable. And I should reflect on what my role is in that interaction.
Yes. And that's all we need from him.
Yeah. No. We're
not getting it.
We're not going to get it from him.
No, I don't think we are.
There's no way that this kind of touchy behavior was this prevalent for this long for him, and that he like is going to understand what on some level I sort of get that it calls into question his entire like identity, essentially.
Sure.
This is one of his calling cards, is this sort of behavior. So like this is a confusing thing for him to be faced with. I just, my larger feeling about it is not that even he, I mean, it would be nice if he could sort of take up this mantle.
Sure.
But more than that, it should be reflective of the fact that politics isn't fair. Things aren't fair, but this is not his moment. He doesn't get to have this be his moment.
Yeah.
This is a different moment than the last moment. All of the other moments have been a moment for him.
Right.
For all of history, for all of his 1,000 years of life.
Yep.
But this isn't the one.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're still trying to figure out how we can scare undocumented people in this country by putting a citizenship question on the census.
Right. And this is being, you know, this has been in the courts for a while, and Maryland, a judge in Maryland sued the federal government, and a judge just ruled on their behalf about taking this off. Right, California and New York have already had a judge rule in favor of them after they sued. So we're coming up actually just in a couple weeks where this is going to get argued in front of the Supreme Court. Yeah. So they're ultimately going to decide this. But, you know, it's a huge deal, especially it is everywhere, because you're right, it's a scare tactic. But also, I mean, you know, just thinking about the state of California, I mean, this is, you know, the census is how, you know, we find out how much
our
representation and our,
how funding
much
is apportioned.
Money for services we get. So, you know, it should not matter whether people are citizens or not, because they are humans that are here, and that's that's that. Like, end of sentence, you know, full stop. So we'll see. I have, obviously have some concerns this about the Supreme Court.
I do too. This is such a weird thing for Texas to not be invested in.
Yeah, right?
Because if I'm thinking of states with large undocumented populations, I know that there are a lot of Republican states that are border states especially that make it very difficult to be undocumented.
Yeah.
But frankly, there are plenty of undocumented people anyway in those places. Arizona yeah. has a lot of undocumented people.
Sure.
The fact that they make life a living nightmare for them is besides the point, because they are a border state and border states end up inevitably with undocumented people.
Yeah.
I would guess that there are probably northern states that have weird populations of undocumented people 100%. That came through Canada. This is an issue that should matter to every border state because it matters, like their representation, you know, and if you live in a city of 8 million people or something, which no one but New York does, I guess. But, you know, the LA metropolitan area has 18 million people or something in it. If you live in a city of 18 million people and half of those people don't get to be on the census, then, you know, you are still living in a city with 18 million people. They're still there.
Right.
It's just that they are now there and everyone's more uncomfortable. Like, it seems like in a place like Texas where there are going to be inevitably undocumented people because it's on the border.
Right.
That they should... It should matter to them that their representation and funding not reflect the wrong population.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, it's, you know, the thing is that you know, by law, you're required to fill out the census.
Right.
So if that citizenship question is on there, then you're going to have a whole, obviously, you know, population of tens of millions of people who are going to be scared to fill out the census.
Yeah.
And they're not going to want to. It's just going to push people further into the shadows.
Yeah. Right, because it's going to make them criminals some level.
And so,
we don't need to make it this hard to follow the law.
Right.
Yeah. Like, there's no reason to do that.
Yeah.
That's just one of those ridiculous. It's like it's like talking about the wall. It's like doesn't solve the problem that it's designed to solve, but it sounds like a simple solution to a problem that is not the right problem.
And I think that for a lot of non-thinking people, which there are a lot of in this country, it seems to. If you don't give it a second thought, then it might seem like it's a thing that you might put on the census.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if you're if I received the census.
And it asked if I was a citizen, I would happily fill out that information.
Right. Like, that's a thing. And so I think that, like, it just takes, and that is, I think, what, you know, Trump and everyone, all of his allies are banking on is that, you know, of course, he mentioned it at one of his rallies recently, like, you know, the crazy Democrats don't even think that we should ask people whether they're citizens or not. And then, you know, that's a huge applause line. But obviously those people are not, you know, don't get to the second
layer
of what that means. Also, they're all white people. So,
No, but I mean, like, there's if
there's the not kind any immigrants at a Trump rally. So.
That if you are a citizen, it's not going to be personally scary for you to fill out the census.
Right.
But you should be able to have... You do want to make sure that your neighbors can fill it out
Right, but that implies empathy, which is a problem that the Republicans have been having since the beginning of time. So
that's so true. meanwhile, Brexit continues to be crumbling.
Oh, my God.
In a way messy and hilarious.
Right.
Because, so, I finally figured out what one of the main sticking points was that I've been trying to figure out this whole time.
I'm glad, because all I have been doing is seeing all of the, like, headlines about how, like, you know, the UK is basically just falling apart and Theresa May is just having her ass handed to her left, right, and center and isn't going to be able to run for, you know, but I haven't.
That's most of the news.
Right, exactly. And that, I feel like, is enough for me. So I'm glad that you took it a step further.
there are a lot of questions about Brexit in terms of which level of Brexit-ness people are willing to accept.
Sure.
Whatever. The main sticking point that I think is maybe like an actual sort of serious, I mean, they're all serious matters, but is a serious matter to the extent that they truly cannot get votes for a deal without figuring this out, is Ireland. Because they don't want to start a new war between Ireland and Northern Ireland. We just finished the last one.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
It wasn't great. No one was doing well. And there is, because of the EU, an open border between Ireland and Northern Ireland.
Right.
That has helped everyone heal.
True.
If they Brexit themselves, which is a verb that I'm using these days, then they have to figure out what to do with that, about that border. And there have been a number of suggestions. One, so they when you hear people talk about the Irish backstop, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about the border in Ireland and whether or not that should remain open. People have floated leaving only that border open. But once that border is open, the border is open. That's not that's not a closed border then. They have floated closing it, but then realized that there would suddenly be a new criminal class of people that are, you know, having to get arms and munitions across the border so that they could restart this war that they're always trying to have. They are not sort of sure how, you know, to whether they should, you know, allow for certain kinds of trade over that border or not other kinds. But the thing is, once you can get something through that border, you can get it to the rest of the UK, no problem, because all the other borders are open. So it's like, and you can't shut off Ireland from the rest of the UK. You know, like, there's a messy situation going on because of the Ireland, Northern Ireland divide.
The backstop.
And because of that, and again, there are a lot of questions about how Brexity the Brexit should be.
Oh, sure.
You know, whatever.
How they're going to be able to trade with the rest of that. I mean, there's like a million different questions.
Yeah, whether or not there's going to be a free flow of goods, but just not people. There can be a free flow of people. Whether it can be a meaningless Brexit where they just don't do Brexit, but call it Brexit and everyone wins. Like, there have been a lot of deals voted on. They voted to ban a no-deal Brexit. The Parliament there did vote to make it not possible for them to just do it without a deal. So they are now stuck. So they have to keep pushing the deadline now because they're now stuck because they can't agree upon a deal.
And the EU is not happy about this either because they're trying to plan what's
going to happen. And Theresa May keeps claiming she'll leave if they'll only vote for her newest deal, but they keep voting down her deals. They've voted down at least three Theresa May deals, if not more, by this point.
I mean, it seems like every day there's been a headline about how Theresa May is just like not going to last through the next 24 hours, basically.
No, exactly. And a lot of that is on the back of what, you know, is disagreement about the Irish backstop. A lot of that, aside from the just general monetary complications that come with, you know, deciding that you're no longer in the EU, that this border issue, I think, rightfully is a sort of real concern that, because it wasn't great for anyone when Ireland and Northern Ireland were at war.
No.
But it was certainly not great for the UK, who is otherwise an island nation that has not much going on, that has finally ended their 600 wars with France because they were in the EU together. You know, like, it was a sort of unnecessary drain on the UK to have an annoying war between people on another island going on that they didn't even care about particularly.
Yeah.
And so to reignite that situation seems unnecessary.
Right.
But again, you can't exit the EU without splitting Ireland and Northern Ireland and leaving that, you know, creating a border at that border again.
Well, I will say that as I feel like because this has gone so terribly, it seems like it's maybe scared off some. Remember when they first voted on this, we were talking about how, like, you know, Frexit was going to be right on its heels and various other, you know, there were a lot of exits planned. There were a ton of exits that were supposedly being planned. And I think everybody was sort of like, this is not going well.
I mean, basically, I've been seeing more and more things that are just like, are they going to have to do another referendum and just hope they can get themselves out of this mess?
That's what the all those marches were. Was that people just wanted to basically re-vote? I mean,
they should, because they are now aware that public opinion is not with them on this.
Oh, yeah.
A majority of British people are not trying to have Brexit.
No.
They just didn't understand what they were voting on. Everyone now knows that.
Some of them did.
Some of them did in the way that Trump voters understand what building a wall is.
Right.
Theoretically, I understand the logic of the wall. It's just stupid.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, it's not that I don't get the logic. And it's like with the citizenship question. If you give it only the first thought, then you haven't given it the second thought. And the second thought is where you find out it's a bad idea.
Right.
The first thought sounds like, who cares?
Right.
So I think at this point, everyone's had to give it a second thought. That's really changed some hearts and minds and also made some people think maybe I should have voted in that Brexit referendum. In any case, it is like, I mean, on the one hand, this is terrible and the world's falling apart. On the other hand, I am pleased that there is another country acting wholly idiotically out there.
I know.
Because it is so embarrassing that Donald Trump is the president.
Right.
And I just like, and nothing would be worse than if people with British accents could constantly harass us about that.
Oh, I know.
But
they're already so uppity.
British accents already make you sound judged.
They don't have a leg to stand on now. But
at this point, if they do that, they don't have a leg to stand on. And that's, I think, really helped me feel less stressed about the whole situation.
Fair.
Can you? I mean, we already have such an inferiority complex when it comes to British accents. Can you imagine if they didn't have anything going wrong there right now while Donald Trump was the president here?
Yeah.
We have a president who can't speak English at all. let alone right. with a British accent.
No.
And we got some evidence of that this week when a video circulated of him mispronouncing the word origins multiple times. He just keeps saying oranges.
Yeah. Well, his...
The oranges of the American...
The, you know, mental synapses.
They're slowly disintegrating.
Yeah, they're not working properly. And they haven't been for a while, but it's... seems to be getting worse. And I think I think that this might be the oranges of his dementia right here.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of words that he doesn't say right, and also a lot of sentences that he doesn't quite get grammatically correct.
That's right.
And a lot of thoughts that wander in a direction and don't ever get to the destination. I mean, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
But... not being able to say the word origins anymore is certainly not a sign. I mean, it's
but
not.
But you're in right mind.
It's not a sign. Losing your ability to say words you already know how to say is a problem. If
that's
it's,
right.
Like, look, he's not speaking Spanish here. Like,
no, I would assume that at a certain point in his life, he would have been able to spit out the word origins.
Yeah. He's not. It's not like he was having to give his first speech in Czech or something. Like,
no.
This is a word that he's known his whole life.
That's right.
The word origins is. I mean, it's not one of the easier English words.
Right.
It's not one of the harder ones either, though.
No.
It's just a middle, it's a regular word. It's
yep.
an workaday word. Like, I feel like every week there is some new thing that he is not articulating correctly.
Yes.
And that, for a guy who's really smart, like
right.
Donald Trump.
Best words.
Has the best words.
Right.
That is a concerning turn of events.
Yikes. Yikes,
Wouldn't
guys.
It be crazy if it turned out this was all just some weird Donald Trump dementia fever dream?
I mean,
we're. It feels right.
But those numbers crunch.
If we did actually definitively find that out, wouldn't you just be like, "Oh, oops, I got too excited about that."
I
like,
almost knocked
over our
whole sound.
Recording equipment. But I mean, like, wouldn't you just be like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, there it is." And then everyone would have to take a hard look at themselves and be like, did I go along with a weird lunatic's fever dream?
And then a lot of them would be like, when can I vote for him again?
Yeah. And that is when we'd all have to think to ourselves, should we start teaching German history a little differently? Because currently I feel like we teach the sort of rise of the Nazi Party as if it was like something no one can possibly comprehend.
Sure.
And I feel like it's actually pretty easy to get a lot of people to go along with one lunatic's fever dream.
Sure.
If that lunatic is sort of charismatic in the right way.
Right.
And reflecting enough rage on the part of people who just
right.
like don't have their lives together because things are falling apart for other reasons.
Right. But once he's a person struggling with dementia who cannot actually like speak in full sentences or say words that, you know, elementary school
right.
children
we might,
can.
I mean.
That's a step further.
It's a step further. It's not great.
No.
It's not looking good. Mm-hmm. So we leave you with that thought. We will update you as we see fit.
Yes.
We'll talk to you later. Bye.